Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network. Presented by SB Nation, hosted by Jake Devereaux, and featuring Keaton DeRosier.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by my co-host, Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster and the Dynasty Guru. Keaton, welcome back to another edition of the Red Seat.
Happy to be here. Just almost broke my glass of milk setting it down on the counter, so make sure that that's clear. We're ready to go.
Well, I guess you're pretty excited if you're over there smashing milk jugs. But yeah, so since the last time we talked, Keaton, the Red Sox have had a substantially more success than they have been having before that. Mitch Moreland had the two home runs last night, including the walk-off. We're recording this on a Monday. That was pretty cool. They also split a mini-series with Tampa Bay, won 2 out of 3 against Toronto. And as we speak right now, they are winning 4-1 against the Rays. And as you just noted, J.D. Martinez just hit an absolute tank. I didn't get to see it because I don't have the game on here, but... yeah, 4-1 over the Rays. If they win this game, all of a sudden they'll be 7-9. That's kind of close to 500. I wasn't expecting that. What do you make of this little run that the Red Sox are on? Think it's real?
I think it's real given the context of who they played. We thought that they would be better than Toronto. They took 2 out of 3. They split a two-game series against Tampa, so they've won 3 out of their last 4. I guess, do I believe it in the sense of what? Like, that they can keep this going forward? Or they're like a playoff team? Or just, I mean, they beat who they were supposed to beat, I guess is how I look at it.
Kind of, right? Like, you have been of the opinion, and I don't think wrongly, that Tampa Bay is maybe the class of the division. The Yankees are playing really well right now. So splitting with Tampa Bay is probably more than I expected. And then winning 2 out of 3 against a really good young Toronto team. They've had trouble with pitching, but, you know, not more than what the Red Sox have had trouble with. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised if the Red Sox finished well below Tampa Bay and below Toronto. So in that case, I'm kind of delightfully surprised by this.
Okay. Well, I guess that had some context. Yeah, I thought that they would be better than Toronto, and so I wasn't surprised. You're right. Both pitching staffs are pretty bad, and all three games were decided by two runs or less. So it's not like there was really a blowout either one way or the other. But the Red Sox offense being substantially better got two wins out of it. It's also curious that, well, last week they got to Ryan Yarbrough in the game that they beat Tampa. Tonight they're getting to him again. They just kind of have his number. I will feel better about where the Red Sox are as a team if they split this four-game series or win it. That'll show to me that they actually can kind of go toe-to-toe with some of these teams. They have a really tough stretch here with eight games, four against Toronto, four against New York. And we kind of briefly hit on it on the pre-cap that if they're able to do some damage in these eight games and, you know, be 500 or better, then that actually probably won't put them in a bad spot in the division, though I don't know how long they'd be able to sustain that, even in the 60-game season. But it is encouraging to see that the bullpen was able to hold up. I will say that was the one thing that I noted in that Toronto series. The bullpen, for the most part, with the exception of the game they lost, really kind of did their job and held Toronto's offense down, which is not something that we're really accustomed to over the past couple seasons.
Yeah, that's been encouraging. I think it has been helpful that they've had more bullpen arms to use, and they've been doing these sort of bullpen days a little bit more effectively than they have been in the past. So I think that's obviously a good thing for them. But I want to focus on Mitch Moreland here a little bit. We got a few listener questions about Mitch Moreland. And so far, his stats before this game tonight, 6 home runs on the year, 12 RBIs. Those are, you know, close to some of the league leaders there. He's got a 251 WRC plus, which is completely outrageous, and he's slugging 935. Obviously, those aren't going to continue, but Moreland has been, without a doubt, the biggest surprise on this team. He only has 33 plate appearances versus, like, 55 for Xander, 51 for Christian Vasquez. So he's been playing significantly less, yet producing significantly more. That's obviously been awesome. But we got a couple listener questions about him that I wanted to get to right now. So the first one came from Matthew Kitson, and he says, any chance that Mitch Moreland plays himself into yet another Red Sox contract? And if I'm not mistaken, Keaton, I think his contract runs through next season as well, or he has like an option for next season. Maybe I'll look that up while you're talking about this. But do you think he'll do that?
Possibly. I mean, I guess it depends on what they view. Yeah, he does. He has a club option for 2021.
Yep. $3 million.
I guess it depends on how they view the young guys. Like, do they think Chavis could play every day, or Dahlbach play every day, or have them split at first base? Dahlbach's got to eventually get called up at some point here. So, I mean, I imagine the club, the way he's going now, will pick up that option. Because this is the type of season where a guy like Moreland can thrive. And he usually always has an incredibly hot first half of the season, hitting dingers, hitting doubles all over the place, and then kind of fades towards the end. But in a 60-game season, he can stay hot for the whole season. And sure, there'll be more. He could probably get more than $3 million on the market. I guess it depends on what the spending looks like, but let's just say in a normal year, he could get more than that on the open market. So the Red Sox probably would feel good about locking him up, especially if they don't feel like Chavis or Dahlbach could take it an everyday role at that position, or the two of them could man it successfully together. I wouldn't be shocked. No.
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll pick up his option for next year. This is, He'll turn 35 during this season, so next year he'll be playing through, I believe, his age 35 year. Yeah, so he'll be playing in his 35 till he's 36. I don't know how much longer he can continue kind of a high level of play. But the other thing that's a factor here is obviously his clubhouse presence, which is something that's been talked about kind of a lot. And he's a nice bat to have behind Xander Bogaerts and JD Martinez and Rafael Devers and all those guys, even though we'll get to, you know, Devers and JD continuing to struggle here. So I definitely think they'll pick it up. I don't think that he gets a contract past that, though, because you already mentioned a bunch of those options that are behind him. And we got another listener question that kind of hints at that stuff. So this one is from Sturge 48, and he says, when is Bobby Dalbec coming up? Why is Chavis only playing first base? This season is lost. Why not give him more time at third base and second base? And then he asks about Benintendi, what's wrong with him? So we'll get to the second part of that question later, but let's focus on the first part. So when do you think Bobby Dalbec gets the call? Chavis has been a little bit better. He's got his WRC plus now for the season up over 100, which is a huge thing for him. He has two home runs now, but he's still striking out at 38.5%. So how do you feel about him right now?
I mean, everything is kind of like magnified in a season like this. There's still only like 15 games into the season, which is a relatively small sample size. So, I mean, the strikeouts are concerning, I guess, pretty much no matter what your sample size is, but, him starting to figure things out more now over the last week versus the first week of the season is encouraging. And hopefully that kind of continues to play that way. I mean, I would think Dalbec is coming up at some point this season. It doesn't feel like very long before the Red Sox won't really be in contention for anything. I guess technically they still are now. I think they're like four games back. But in 2 weeks, if they're like eight games back, I really wouldn't see a point into keeping him down there at the alternate site and just playing sim games. It'd make a lot of sense to get him to face some kind of live pitching before spring training next season. So I would expect maybe by the end of the month, I would expect him to be up there.
Yeah. And do you think he's going to get more than a platoon role? Because right now, this listener is frustrated with Chavis's usage patterns and the fact that when we were talking about him preseason, we were talking about him really splitting time at both first base and second base, but Jose Peraza has gotten the lion's share of the time at second base. He's pretty much started there every game. His defense has not graded out as, you know, spectacular in any way, and he's got a 74 WRC plus, so it does seem like maybe Chavis deserves a little bit of time over there. To me, I think there's something to that.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I feel kind of the same way as the listener here that I don't expect anything at all to come out of this season, so why not see what you have in some guys? But the Red Sox usually tend to, like, not really do that, which is kind of frustrating. Like, we wanted to see them do that with, like, Darwin's in a couple different spots last year, but he stayed in the bullpen where he was at. And some of the other minor league arms didn't really get any kind of role that we thought they might. So it's, I guess I wouldn't expect them to kind of do those experiments just because they haven't in the past, but I would like them to, because I think it's worth it, particularly in like a weird season like this. Like, now is the perfect opportunity to find out what you have in some guys, and in the offseason, if you can trade, like we've talked about moving Chavis for pitching a couple times, well, why not see what he can do at second and third and kind of up his value?
Yeah.
Same with a guy like Dalbec. Get him some time and see what you have with him, and then make a decision on Moreland. Those kind of things that seem to make sense as a path for the ball club. So I would hope to see those things happen. I just don't know if they're going to.
Yeah, I don't think that there's really much possibility of them playing him at third, because he wasn't really a good third baseman in the minor leagues. So I think they kind of know the book is a little bit out on him. I guess there's no, you know, reason they can't play him there on an off day for Rafael Devers, especially, I think, because they've played Jose Peraza there. But there is some element, I think, of them figuring out what they have in Jose Peraza, too. He's still only 26 years old. And next year would be his third ARB year, and he has a fourth ARB year as well. that he's eligible for. So the team still has to make a decision about whether or not it's going to pick up Jose Peraza in those third and fourth arb years. So that's, you know, they're collecting data on that as well.
Sure. Yeah. I just think, like today, Jonathan Arauz is playing third in place of Devers getting the day off, which I don't know if he has ever played third or not, and I don't currently have the game on, so I can't see how he's doing. But I guess that doesn't seem like a bad shakeup of the order, because prior to this season, Jonathan Arauz had never played above double A. So yeah. Not bad to kind of see what you can get out of him at different positions.
Yeah, there's a lot of decision-making that has to be made with all of these guys. So, yeah, collecting info, that's what they're doing. All right, so I want to switch gears here to talk about my man Alex Verdugo. I was psyched about this. Alex Verdugo is now the leadoff hitter for the Red Sox. I've been pretty much saying that he should be the leadoff hitter for this team since the Red Sox went to summer camp and he was healthy again. I never really liked Benintendi in that spot much. I'm psyched about this. I think it's really going to work out well. Verdugo is playing some of the best baseball on this team right now. And in terms of where he ranks in hitting, he's third on the team in hitting, 123 WRC plus, decent on base percentage. He's got a patient approach at the plate, doesn't strike out a lot, will take pitches, plays great defense. I'm psyched about this.
Yeah, and that was actually something we forgot to mention about Moreland. The defense that he's playing right now is just absurd.
Oh, so, he's great.
I mean, that's a hell of a presence to have at first. But yeah, all facets of the game clicking for Verdugo, too. He's made a couple of great catches. That one on Travis Shaw at the wall was incredible. And just having to wait for that to come down and leap and make the catch, that was very impressive. And then going the opposite field twice over the monster, very impressive for a left-handed hitter.
Yeah, you don't see that a ton. And to see that from a guy this young is pretty crazy.
Yeah. I mean, so I don't think we've seen someone do that with authority since Ortiz.
No, I agree. We got a couple listener questions about Verdugo. The first one comes from Jacob Cordero, and he says, will Verdugo work out long-term as a leadoff hitter? And I'm going to kind of rephrase this a little bit. Do you think there's anyone currently on this team better suited to the leadoff spot? Or do you think that this job, now that it's passed to Verdugo, is pretty much his as long as he continues to play well?
Yeah, no, it should be his. And I don't think there's somebody better suited currently on the roster. I guess if Peraza could get on base more. But, I mean, I think we have enough of a sample size. It's just not really his game. So, yeah, Verdugo, it should be. And I wrote an article back in March when we thought we had a regularly scheduled season about leadoff options for the Red Sox. And in it, I wrote about how they're probably going to give Benintendi the first shot, but it should be Verdugo. And I'm glad. I mean, I didn't expect Benintendi to struggle like he has, but I did want to see Verdugo in the leadoff spot because he hit at the top of the order with the Dodgers pretty frequently. They did some weird things with their leadoff position. They had A.J. Pollock and Max Muncy do that a lot. Lead off a lot. So Verdugo was hitting second, but he had better success at the top of the order than he did in the bottom of the order. And it seems like he has that right attitude to be a table setter for the lineup.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think there's anybody on the team who has this skill set. And, you know, he has been a top 100 prospect in baseball. He was perennially a top 100 prospect in baseball before he made his debut. This is a guy who's graded out as like a future 60 to 60 plus grade hit tool, good raw power. I don't think there's anybody who is even in the conversation for the leadoff job other than Benintendi, who is even in his sort of range in terms of talent. Like when we're talking about Verdugo versus Peraza talent levels, it's just completely different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but Benintendi, man, it's just very clear that things are not right with him. And so that kind of leads me into my next point. I want to talk about Benintendi's struggles. He is currently still, as we speak, the worst hitter on the team. His WRC plus has sunk all the way to 18. He's striking out 34% of the time. He has no home runs, one RBI. His batting average is 0.56. He is in as bad a slump as I can honestly remember anybody starting off. I don't know if I actually do remember anybody being in a slump this bad. This is like worse than what Jackie Bradley Jr.'s bad slumps are.
Chris Davis, right? Did he start off like 0-54 last year?
Well, yeah.
That might
be
the only one that's worse.
Yeah, Chris Davis. That was epic. But this is becoming epic, and it's so befuddling because Benintendi is such a great hitter, and he has been basically since he got into the big leagues. And, you know, he's not the 70 grade hitter we thought he was going to be, but, I mean, he's probably a 60 grade hitter at least. It's weird. You wrote about this, and you came to the conclusion in your article that you were not overly worried about him. Can you explain? Because for me right now, I'm very worried.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah, so he has some really interesting tendencies that I think kind of point to what he needs to do to succeed. And it starts with his O swing percentage, which is the percent of times he swing at pitches outside the zone, is down from a year ago and more in line with when he had his really great 2018 season. And his O contact percentage is about 30% lower than his career average. So essentially, he's not swinging as many pitches out of the zone, but when he does, he's not making contact with them. But he has, I mean, he's always been able to draw a walk and have an understanding of the strike zone. That I guess, isn't totally shocking. But what was shocking was his zone swing percentage was down about 10%. Even though his zone contact percentage is the highest of his career at 90%. So when he swings and pitches in the zone, he's making contact with them. He's getting good results. However, he's just not swinging at pitches in the zone. Mm. And for someone who's in a slump, that seems like the easiest thing to fix. Especially for a guy like Benintendi that has such a handle on the strike zone and can draw a walk at essentially any point. It's just, he knows what pitches are strikes. He just needs to pull the trigger.
I feel like we need him to hang out with like Kevin Millar and Bellhorn and a bunch of these guys from the 2004 team that just had complete smooth brain syndrome and would just go up there and, you know, take cerebral at bats and kind of just not overthink things. Not swinging at pitches in the zone seems like he is so far in his head that,
oh yeah,
I mean, like, this is totally between the shoulders and not a physical talent or, you know, can't pick up pitches or whatever. Like, it's totally in his head.
Yeah, and that's evidenced by he has a walk rate over 20%, which is absurdly high. It's in the top 2% of the league. So he's getting on base. He's just not swinging enough at strikes. And he knows which pitches are balls and strikes because he's drawing walks left and right. So you're right. It definitely seems like it's just a complete mental block at this point, but it gives me confidence that he'll be able to overcome it.
Yeah, man, I hope he figures this out. It would be way too long for him to continue to do this for the entire year. I think a change is coming. I own him on some fantasy teams, and I'm continuing to trot him out, and it sucks, but, you know, I'm not sure there's anything else that can be done there. But we do have a few listener questions, too, about him. At least one, I think.
The one was, what's wrong with Benny? So I think we just covered that.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah, so we're good on that one. And we'll get to the other more fun one about Benny later. I want to move on to Brian Johnson. So Brian Johnson is no longer with the Red Sox organization. He was granted his release by the team. I think there was maybe some frustration about not being up with the team. And I think he just kind of ran his course. What is your impression of him not being with the organization anymore? Does that surprise you at all? Or are you just kind of like, yeah, it's time?
Yeah, I mean, it does a little. Given the state of the current roster for starting pitching and how we're basically rolling two bullpen days out there, and we know that he can go get innings, whether or not they're good or bad. I mean, they certainly couldn't be worse than what they're rolling out there. That part was surprising. I know he wasn't on the 40-man, so they would have had to make some room, but there's plenty of guys that they could have made room for. So I guess I'm a little surprised in that sense, but overall it's more of a thank you for your service. We'll catch you later.
Yeah, I think it was time. I think it was pretty clear that the judgment on Brian Johnson had been made by Chaim Bloom in this organization, and there were just more interesting arms, and I think there was nothing more evidence of that by when the Red Sox sent down Weber, they brought up Dylan Covey, who's really horrendous to watch, instead of, you know, a guy like Brian Johnson. So if Dylan Covey's coming up instead of you, you're probably better off in another organization. So hopefully he lands on his feet. It seems like an all-around good guy. So, you know, sad to see him leave for that regard. But let's talk about the pitching here a little bit. Eovaldi continues to be a really consistent presence for the Red Sox. He struck out 10 guys in his last game. You know, he's looked good overall. He's been locating well. He looks healthy, which is the biggest thing to me. When Eovaldi's healthy, he's been good. As long as he's been with the Red Sox, he's been good when he's been healthy. But my question for you, Keaton, is that as we see him be this consistent presence for this team, he's pretty much the only one that has, well, I guess I'll give some credit to my guy that we're going to talk about next. Martin Perez has been pretty good, too. But Eovaldi's really been that reliable guy since day one. Is he still best used as a trade chip for this team? Or with this team having the feel of a team that could kind of morph into a contender with just a few moves around the fringes, at least that's how I feel about it. I feel like there are a couple arms and a healthy Chris Sale away from that point. Because if we think about it, right? So next year, by June, you could have Chris Sale. You should have Erod at the start. You will have Eovaldi as long as you don't trade him. Let's say you sign one guy, and we got a question about signing Trevor Bauer this winter. Let's just say they make a splash and sign Trevor Bauer. All of a sudden, you're like one decent fifth starter away. Or Martin Perez, you just pick up his option. I guess he's been playing like a decent fifth starter. Like, that's a pretty good rotation. So my question to you is, like, you know, do you trade him in this market that could be pretty bad in terms of your return, or is he more valuable to this team?
Yeah, I think he's more valuable to the team. I mean, you laid it out. This entire pitching staff is completely different with a healthy Erod and a healthy Chris Sale. And Eovaldi is your third starter rather than your first. They definitely still need to sign a pitcher, but it makes it easier to sign one versus two, especially in what's probably going to be a weird market. I think he's more important to the team, but I think it comes down to what is more important to this Red Sox front office, rolling out a contender or saving more money. Because if they wait until the offseason, going into what hopefully will be like a full regular season of baseball, then they probably could get more for Eovaldi after a 60-game stretch where he's been really impressive. And so if they felt like moving him, I don't think it would at all be during the season this year. It would be prior to the season next year. But they'd still have work to do on their own starting pitching. So him as just a player, more valuable to the Red Sox, but it depends on if they want to pay their third starter $17 million.
Mm. Yeah, and I tend to agree. I think if the Red Sox plan is to add another pitcher, and especially because it seems like we are going to get to August 31st at this point, it doesn't seem like Rob Manfred if he was going to shut it down, he would have shut it down during the Miami debacle or during this recent Cardinals debacle. It seems like they're just hell-bent on playing, and Jackie Bradley was right when he was asked about that, and he was like, yeah, I think we're going to play no matter what. He's convinced me. So I think they're going to reset the luxury tax. I do think that they're going to spend. So I'm starting to lean towards keeping Eovaldi as well. He's leading the team in WAR for pitchers on Fangraphs WAR, which measures it by FIP. But second in that race to him and first on the team in ERA at 3.45 is Martin Perez, who's now thrown 15.2 innings pitched. He's got two wins. He leads the team in wins at that point. He's been walking a bunch of guys. A lot of those were in his first really bad outing. But Matt wrote an article about how Martin Perez has actually been doing a pretty damn good job of limiting hard contact. And it's looking like your boy Jake was not out of his mind to think Martin Perez could have been something. Or is something.
Two starts does not make a season. But it is certainly impressive. I'm not there yet. I'm excited about the progress that he's made. But I'm not ready to kind of dub him a success quite yet. Although the cutter has been a pretty great pitch for him.
Yeah, it really has. And just to get people updated on where that is, so he made that change to the cutter last year, and he threw it 30.9% of the time. This year, he's throwing it even more at 31.6% of the time. He's throwing his sinker less. He's throwing his changeup a fair amount, actually more than he ever has in his career. And the changeup has been a neutral pitch, and the cutter has been among the better starter cutters. So it is kind of looking like a game changer.
Yeah, it is interesting to note, though, that his spin rate on all of his pitches is down this year compared to last year, which is kind of interesting. But he is getting more whiffs on his cutter by a couple percentages, which is good to see that it's just kind of continuing to be a very strong pitch for him.
Yeah, I agree. So we talked about Martin Perez and his success. We talked about Ryan Weber getting sent down and Dylan Covey coming into his place. A couple more notes before we get to listener questions. Matt Hall and Chris Mazza were also sent down since the last time we talked. So there's another interesting kind of wrinkle. Major League Baseball has decided that it's not going to make that final cut down to 26-man rosters, which is what it would typically be in a regular year. They are going to stay at 28-man rosters for the rest of the year. So it kind of looks like the group that they have here, maybe some of the back-end guys like Covey get switched out, but it seems like other than that, you know, this is kind of the mix.
Yep, that's what they got.
Yeah. It's what they got, whether they like it or not. Jackson Posey has our first listener question here. He says, if Alex Verdugo and Andrew Benintendi were made of Play-Doh, what colors would they be?
First one that came to mind for me was blue for Verdugo and red for Benintendi.
Hmm. Dodgers and Red Sox.
Yeah.
Was that subliminal?
It might have been.
I feel like Verdugo would be orange, like a kind of a burnt Texas orange. And I feel like Benintendi would be like a kind of a military color, camo-ish, like green. He's just like, every time I hear Benintendi talk, and this is no knock on the guy, I just want to go to sleep because he's just so damn boring when I hear him give interviews. And Verdugo is like the opposite. He's the human version of a Lamborghini. You know, he just screams, look at me, when he's talking or playing in the field or running the bases or whatever. And Benny's just like, you know, the Toyota Camry. That's what it is.
Yeah. You went way deeper than I did. I just stayed real surface.
Sometimes, you know, these questions hit. Big Stash, Mr. Nice Crocs, says, can you please make me feel hopeful? Doesn't have to be for this season. I just need to feel good about this team after the Mookie trade in this fart napkin of a season. Wow, fart napkin. Is that in your vernacular, Keaton? Have you ever used fart napkin?
No.
Will you now?
I might. I mean, it's a good one.
Yeah, it's not bad. I think what we outlined about the starting pitching next year, you know, if they keep Eovaldi, that's three. Martin Perez is a five, and one signee either goes towards the front of the rotation if it's a Bauer type or somewhere around the middle. I mean, I feel a whole lot better about that group next year than I do this year, right? That's not that far off.
Yeah, I mean, that's the definition of hope right there. I was going to go with the core of the lineup with Verdugo and Devers and Bogarts is great and locked up for like the next 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they still have, when this lineup is going right, and obviously it's not because JD Martinez and Rafael Devers are still hitting terrible. Their WRC pluses are well under 100. That is not going to continue. I'm super confident in that. And it's why I didn't really spend any time on it tonight, is because I'm convinced that those are kind of blips. And if you can just add another pitcher, maybe a bullpen piece and like one position player here, I feel pretty good, honestly. But then again, I've been optimism guy, which has been weird. All right, Shropshire Bear says, what do you think are the plans to fix this shit show in 2021, rotation specifically? Do you think the club realizes how pissed off fans are at the shambles after the Mookie trade, or do they even care? So this is kind of the same question, but specifically, Keaton, I guess this second part is pretty tailor-made for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that the club cares about fans and how they feel about the Mookie trade?
Yeah, I think they do, to an extent, I guess. They were very clearly caught off guard by the fan reaction to the trade, holding three separate press conferences to try and explain why this was actually a good thing for the franchise. So they were clearly swayed enough by the immediate reaction to try and explain it away. Three was probably an overkill, but we know how this front office is with press conferences. They really don't do very well at them.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
I think they care, but I think they expected more kind of just blind following,
yeah,
than being upset at trading him away. I mean, the plan has to be focusing on the starting pitching, because they can't roll out a rotation like this for an entire season. And they've been telling us all along, even since they traded Mookie, that this team still can compete. But I mean, with the starting pitching they're rolling out there, that's just very obviously not true. And they're absolutely lying to themselves. So, I mean, I guess when they said all that, we did expect to have Eduardo Rodriguez. If Martin Perez really is this successful reclamation project that changes everything. So, yeah, there would be one starting pitcher away from having a lot more confidence again. But that has to be the focus of this offseason. The lineup is fine. The bullpen is frustrating, but generally gets through it more often than they fail. Even though it's frustrating to watch. But the mega elephant in the room is just how terrible the starting pitching is. So that should be their focus to address it. And I think in general, they do care about the fans.
So I think that I agree with everything that you said. And I want to move to our next listener question, kind of jump a few ahead. There was a guy who asked about signing Trevor Bauer in this offseason. And Trevor Bauer is the top starting pitcher who's going to be available. He's going to be 30. He's pitching extremely well for Cincinnati this year. Talk about spin rate. He's pretty much a spin rate god in all sorts of categories. His career's been a little bit up and down, which has been frustrating. But when you talk about the other guys on the market for next season, you're talking about guys like Stroman, Mike Minor, who's getting old, Jake Odorizzi, who's good, but kind of been up and down, Robbie Ray, who I want nothing to do with. Pitchers in that sort of vein, James Paxton is another one, but he scares me health-wise. For me, I think it's got to be Trevor Bauer or a trade.
Yeah, and I think even though Bauer has been really inconsistent, if he has a really solid 60-game stretch here, I think he'll end up pricing himself out of the Red Sox range. I don't think they want to spend another $17 to $20 million on a player going into next year, knowing that they'll have Rodriguez back and Chris Sale back. I kind of see them targeting guys that are going to be in like the 10 to 12 range. I don't think Stroman wants anything to do with this organization, so he's probably out. Odorizzi kind of feels like the guy that it'll end up being. I love Robbie Ray, and I would hope that it's him. I know he struggles with walks, but God, his fastball and slider are so freaking good and fun to watch that I think maybe give the Red Sox pitching staff a chance to do something fun with him. I would love it for it to be him. He would be my choice.
So the cap for next year, just to give people a picture, the luxury tax situation, I should say, the Red Sox are expected to owe $128 million after this season. And if we assume we make it to the 31st and everything resets there, I actually do think that the Red Sox could hand out Trevor Bauer like a $25 million a year contract and still be well under the luxury tax threshold. And I'm not sure that they would really balk at that because we've seen this organization be pretty reactionary in terms of, you know, fans get upset or, you know, they do poorly the year before, go out and sign Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez in the same offseason. Like, that is a terrible example of them being reactionary, but yeah, they kind of are. And I don't think Bloom will spend on someone who he doesn't see as worthwhile. So I could see them making that signing. Especially because, like, Eddie comes off the books after 2021. It's his final arbitration year. Chris Sale's going to be healthy. So even if you're paying Eddie, like, a healthy salary in arbitration, which I don't know that his figure is going to be much higher than it was this year. It was 8.3 this year. I don't know if they can go down. I don't think they can go down, but it's probably not going to go up by much. I don't think they're going to owe a ton in arbitration next year.
No, I don't think they will, but I just don't expect them to spend money.
But why not? They always have.
Yeah, until it came to the best player they've ever had.
Well, right, seems but like we know that that situation was way more complicated than just that one thing. Like, they were in a bad position financially, and, you know, we can talk about how they should have done it anyway, but, like, now that they're in a situation where they literally don't have any excuse to spend, why wouldn't they?
Because I still don't think they want to. I think that's a big reason why they have Bloom there, is to find guys that can perform for lower salary. So, like, somebody like Bauer, I just don't think they're going to go after. I think he's going to be priced out of their range.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the only way that they don't sign Bauer is if Bloom doesn't like him or someone else blows them out of the water. But I think they'll make a really big offer to him, just personally. All right, next question comes from Cults 10. Deep down, do you want to make a run or tank for a stud pitcher in the draft? Keaton, what would you rather do? Tank for Rocker and Leiter, or, you know, make the playoffs?
Yeah, I would like to tank. I think not having Eduardo Rodriguez really changed the entire complexion of the season. And I, just because of that, and, like, they're not obviously just going to spend money on a short season, and they can't really make a trade because of the market for a short season. Like, people aren't going to be willing to, like, offer stuff up or give people up really all that easily.
Mm-hmm.
That I'd love to have a nice, shiny prospect.
I don't think that they'll be good enough at tanking to probably get not one of those top two guys. And I don't really care about anybody who's not those top two guys in a way that is so significant that I would prefer that to winning. So for me, I would rather see them push for 500 and make the playoffs and, like, watch a little bit of playoff baseball that matters to some degree and just see what happens in this wild year. I don't know. I'm not expecting anything, obviously, but
Yeah. I think. Yeah, this year is just so weird. Like, if they were in the same spot right now in a 162 game season, I would feel differently. I would say that, I mean, like you outlined, they're like a move or two away from significantly overhauling the roster that they have. So I'd want them to go and make those moves. This seems like such a weird year that, like, I don't really care where they fall because it's just a weird 60 game season. So, yeah. If we have a chance at a nice shiny new prospect, that's fun. Those are always fun.
Yeah, prospects are fun for sure. Ben Jacobson was the one that asked the Trevor Bauer question, so thank you for that, Ben. Hoosier Khan asks us, do you think Martinez is giving his all this season? Was reported that he refused to DH the other day. I didn't see that report, and I know you didn't see that report either, Keaton. I don't have any reason to believe that Martinez, who seems to have been like pretty much a second coach or third coach on this team that's the whole time he's been here, has any reason not to play hard.
Yeah. I'm trying to see if I can like quickly find something. I just think I just found something on the Sports Hub that said, did he quit on the Red Sox? So I don't know if that's what it's referring to or not, but I did not see that story anywhere at all. I don't really have any reason to believe that he would. He loves from everything that we've gathered, he just loves the process of playing baseball. So I don't know why that would all of a sudden change here, especially in a year where, like, I think we've talked about this before, but we don't expect him to opt out just because of the weirdness that will be this offseason. He'll be able to get more money if he just stays. So if he's planning on staying, it doesn't make sense to, like, even though it's a weird season, to just bail on it and then be like, psych, guys, I'm back. Let's do this all again next year. Like, I feel like the Red Sox are pretty pissed off about that.
Yeah, it's not a good impression to make on your teammates or your employer if you're planning on not opting out. So, yeah, I agree. I don't think there's much to that. Gordon Constock has our next and final question. He says, what slash line would Verdugo have to end up with to make you feel okay with the Mookie trade?
I would need him to be a perennial 8-win player and win an MVP in the next 3 years.
My standards are not so high. I'm very happy with the young, exciting Verdugo right now. I think he'll settle in as like a 280 to 300 hitter every year with a high OBP and some good defense. So I'm happy with him. Obviously, I wish we had Mookie Betts instead of him, but you know, I'm pretty stoked with Verdugo right now. One of the most fun players to watch on the team.
Yep. Not to say that I'm not enjoying him, because I too am very excited about him and enjoying his playing.
Yeah, it's nice to have some young talent, but better to have Mookie.
Yep.
All right, that wraps up our show. If you haven't checked out Keaton's piece on Benintendi, please go ahead and do that. I will be writing something at Over the Monster at some point this week, probably. And I have a list of things, but I don't know what I'm going to write about yet. So look for my unnamed piece. The Red Sox also could see a couple new starters coming up here. We might get Kyle Hart on Thursday, so that could be interesting. Look for that. Find us on Twitter and follow the show, and subscribe to the show. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow Keaton at The Spoken Keats. You can follow me at DevJake. You can follow the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. And remember to subscribe, rate, and review us, and ask us any questions about the Sox on there, and we'll get back to you. So thanks very much for joining us again on the Over the Monster Podcast Network. That has been the Red Sea Podcast.